this is a recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. Have you adjusted to the glacier yet?
I don't know if I have, but at least my car started all right this morning.
Yeah, well, you've adjusted to living on the glacier.
Well, his car has adjusted.
Yeah. And that's my co-host, Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing, man?
How are you doing? It's cold out.
So I
came in this morning. I recognized you. You're the gray version of Earl Ingram is returning.
The graying of Earl Ingram.
The graying of Earl Ingram, yeah. Right. That's exactly.
You know, man, a buddy of mine who lives in Florida. What part of Florida? The Gulf part of it, where it's always warm. And you know, we were talking the other day, and he said, "Man, it's 58 degrees."
How boring.
That's it. He said, "I didn't move down here for it to be 58
oh,
degrees.
Oh, he's complaining about 58. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. "I didn't move down here for it to be." I said, "Well, how long is it going to stay 58? "Well, you know, maybe by tomorrow we'll be back up where we're supposed to be." You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very small violin playing for him.
But anyway, Sandy, a couple things. We knew we weren't going to get away. Mother Nature never forgets.
No, it's averaging out.
Yeah, I know. I always say Mother Nature never forgets. And we were all celebrating. We got through December and, we've already caught up.
Yeah, on average, I think we're catching up because we're now like 35 degrees below average and have been for several days. So that makes up for a lot.
But there were so many people. I mean, this was not snow. This was an ice storm.
I know.
Right? I mean, the water content, Sandy, those couple days back to back, that heavy water content, maybe, always hoping and looking ahead, maybe because there was so much water content, we're ahead and maybe we'll get a break in between because we had so much water content in those couple snowstorms.
Sure, okay. Whatever. That's a good theory.
I didn't say it was scientific.
No. Yeah, well, and it isn't.
No, it's not scientific. But anyway, a lot to talk about, as always, Sandy. How about them Packers?
Wow, that was something. It was a great game to watch. I actually started it and watched the whole thing because it was going so well. And, you know, it was much more than just, I mean, the defense played well. The offensive line gave them time. It was a good team, you know. And hats off to the coaching staff to take a bunch of young guys, bring them all this way. I would guess that San Francisco is very worried right now. The only thing that you can see that the league favors the number one seed by a lot because this game is being played on Saturday. So they give the Packers a short week to recover, and meanwhile, San Francisco has been sitting and resting for 2 weeks. So,
well, Sandy, I don't disagree with you often, but I don't think San Francisco is shaking at the thought of the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, either were the Cowboys.
Well, Gilbert Brown did say to me, that we have their number. We've beaten them the last five or six games. And I didn't buy it when he said it, but then I looked, and the Packers have not lost in that stadium.
Yeah, we've lost one game.
Yeah, so they've kind of got their number. And can you imagine working for Jerry Jones and Jerry Jones gets embarrassed nationally? Can you imagine his response behind closed doors?
Yeah, I'm sure that Mike McCarthy, he walked off very stoically. That was too bad. I, I, I don't know why I got sort of disaffected from the about the Mike McCarthy Aaron Rodgers show, so I didn't feel too badly for Mike McCarthy, and I was very glad to have Aaron Rodgers now so far in the rearview mirror. We've now got someone people are talking about being his equal, and we can ignore all the falderall.
Aaron who?
Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, that, you know, he's actually put himself in a kind of cartoon character.
Oh, yeah. He's decided that he likes publicity of all kinds and will do anything to get it. And it's kind of it's uncovering a different person than everyone thought he was for most of his career. And I think there's a fair amount of people who are feeling sorry for him, thinking that he's kind of fallen into a trap, this kind of influencer trap. But wow.
Yeah, he's done some damage to his to his past, and
well, he's got all this cockamamie stuff that he likes spouting. He's totally drunk the Joe Rogan Kool-Aid, and become all that Joe Rogan is. Joe Rogan's a very popular figure in
people who don't know who Joe Rogan is. He's the MMA, what is it, mixed martial arts?
Yeah, but he's also got a he's an influencer, yeah. Big time influencer.
So let's talk about Sandy. People are talking about influencers. What is an influencer?
That's a good question. That's my exact... therein lies the rub, Earl. I mean, influencers are people who people listen to.
Yes.
And it's so it's... But it's, to some extent, influencers are like the flame that the moth has to fly towards to its own detriment, right? And finally, the moth gets too close to the flame. I think influencers are flames and they attract moths. And, you know, lots of influencing is done. The Kardashians were influencers. People wanted to look at them mainly. And they were willing to listen to them so they could look at them. But the list of, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee was an influencer who got hired by ESPN because he had so many followers. One of the ways he had that following was to have people like Aaron Rodgers on who would spout interesting stuff, regardless of its factual merit, and excite controversy. Controversy is kind of at the heart of what influencers need, want, and create.
You know, Sandy, just as I look, and it's certainly a time of its own. Influencers, certainly, you know, we don't have to have credentials. They don't have to be anybody special.
No, I mean, YouTube is built around it. TikTok built around it. X used to be Twitter is built around the whole concept. It's sort of a magnification of what friends use. I mean, what Facebook was, which Facebook, you had friends. And if you had enough friends, it seemed like you were an influencer, and the stuff you posted on Facebook would affect the thought process of your many, many, many friends. Remember, you had 5,000 plus friends.
5,000.
You were damn near an influencer.
Yeah, you know, I was walking around with my chest poked out, and had 5,000 followers on Facebook, and my feet wouldn't touch the ground.
Yeah, but I mean, Facebook has been eclipsed in this whole by things that are more dynamic, particularly the ones that involve videos, so that YouTube and then Twitter has developed a process for videos. And so, you know, these people now use all of these sort of self-publishing mechanisms for videos to excite followers who then cause them to have advertisers.
Yeah, these people have figured out a way
to make money.
To make money.
Yeah,
and. And so when you say influencer, I'm always like, okay, I don't see too many, you know, septuagenarians or octogenarian influencers. There are a lot.
We're trying. we're trying. I mean, radio shows like this are efforts to be influencers, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, we're trying to at least attract an audience.
You mean
talk
to
them?
We can possibly be influencers?
Well, maybe. Oh. I don't
Calvin's
know.
Calvin's laughing.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah, but you know, it's the new world, right? This is how it works. and people know how to take advantage of it. And some of the people that I see that they have listed as influencers, I just shake my head and say, why is that person an influencer? Why would you want to follow that person? What is it about that person? And as you stated, it's, you know, they do this stuff through the internet.
Well, they do it through the internet, and lots of people, it just, it strikes a chord, okay? And whether it's a positive or a negative chord in the person, it strikes a chord. I mean, you know, who's the biggest influencer of all? Donald Trump.
I was about to say Donald
Trump. I think Donald Trump is basically the magnification of it being an influencer. He's the biggest influencer of all. He's, you know, erratic. He talks about any subject. He's not particularly reliable in terms of his ideological view of things, but he has influenced a great number of people to who are his followers.
So does it mean, well, I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to say this because I'll say it to you off the air.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
But because, you know, it's just not, you know, we don't see those things as the new generation sees it. You're my generation. And so we expect more from a person other than substance, I guess is what I'm looking for.
We expect substance. Well, you know, yeah, although I would guess that if you look at who it is that are followers and following people, it's a great number of baby boomers, boomers who are then therefore relatively close to our age.
Following Trump.
Who are followers because they are reading things, seeing things, listening to things that strike a chord. And there's far less of the reliable media to reach out and find, right? So, you know,
right.
Fox News is a supreme influencer.
Well,
MSNBC wants to be an influencer. These are all, instead of being news sources anymore, they've become news/influencing
outlets. Well, we just saw yesterday in Iowa, you know, what influencing can really mean, right?
Because, well, I mean, the Iowa outcome is...
Sandy, hold the thought. 844-967-2789 on a frigid Tuesday morning at 540 AM WAUK and 101 FM the Shaw. Beautiful frozen studios.
We're in the warming house.
Yeah. We'll return. At 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams, and we're about to have a conversation that I think is long overdue. And not enough people are willing to have the conversation. But you look at where we are, Sandy. And this is real. Donald Trump is no figment of the imagination. Donald Trump, with all of his warts and flaws and character issues, is a guy who's sitting on the precipice of becoming the president of the United States again. And I've been one who have constantly said, I don't know how people, what are they seeing if you look and listen to him, you just say, this man should never be, ever again, the president of the United States because of all of the character flaws and issues that he has. It's one thing, Sandy, if you had those things and people didn't know about him, but he wears them as a badge of honor. All of these flaws that he had. I mean, all of us have flaws, but we're not running for president of the United States. So what? Explain to those of us who just can't fathom or figure this out, Sandy, what's going on?
Well, I can only try to explain it to myself and therefore explain it to others. But you can see from the outcome in Iowa, which is a strange process, this caucus process. You're not going into voting booths. Far fewer people participate in it than participate in primaries. But, and you know, people can look at the overwhelming victory won by 30 percentage points, but still, his opponents got almost half. You know, he got 51%, and therefore there were 49% who didn't vote for him. So, but the people who are running against him are very careful about criticizing the primary elements of the MAGA movement, primarily which are primarily cultural. Okay, and what's happened is that I think in this country, if we're honest with ourselves, what we're involved with is a cultural war, a cultural battle, a pitch battle between those who have a vision for America that is based in many respects on ethnicity and culture, and is not premised on the simply on the principle of a constitution that is premised on a democracy and a plural vote that decides things for the country. And I think the whole reason for the big lie and the notion so many people are willing to adopt on the Republican side, 67% of Republicans polled believe that Donald Trump probably won the election. I mean, that's an extraordinary number. But I think it's because it's necessary in this cultural war, because the cultural war, which I believe is primarily ethnically based, requires that democracy not really work in the manner that it's thought to primarily work, which is the majority rules, right? The majority vote rules. Well, if the numbers are running against you in the majority based on an ethnic headcount and on then you need something else. You need democracy to get some chinks in its armor. You need to change democracy so that it isn't quite so clear that the majority rules. And I think what's happened is that liberals have been painted with the veneer of being the other side of the Cultural Revolution. It's liberals who are fostering this change in the ethnic content of America and the focus of America. And wokeism is a way to attack liberals. Liberals seem to be the premise for all this stuff that's conceived of as being woke. And we've got the deep state. The deep state is this government that's comprised of liberals who are working as civil servants, as professional government workers, who are running the government behind the scenes in these liberal manners that are essentially attacking, people believe, the sort of the basic cultural attributes of America that are important. So some of those cultural attributes relate to, you know, so the evangelical faith and the evangelical issues, but I believe even behind the scenes, much more of it is premised on what people look like, and the difference that America will seem to be to people.
Cease to be what she once was.
Right. When the Ozzie and Harriet that the boomers all watched in the 50s, and the Leave It to Beaver, and the
My Three Sons,
and you know, and Milwaukee itself, when it was 6%. Or 10% African American and 90% not African American in the city. Things have changed a great deal demographically and ethnically, and it's really that, I think, that has people so very concerned, because you can't look at the economy and be terribly concerned other than the plight of the middle class, which in my analysis is the result of conservative conduct of government, which has changed the benefits being realized by middle class America, how they pay for them and what they receive, and it's kind of destroyed their budget. But people are looking past that because when you get down to it, this tribalism is in our DNA. And we have to overcome tribalism and the biases that it creates in us with actual cognitive thought, with cognitive commitments to societal norms that we find important for the purpose, which is what America was premised on. But America has increasingly had its democracy stressed by this cultural issue, and it's happening in other countries as well, and it's alarming.
You know, Sandy, we're gonna delve even deeper into this conversation because ignoring it is not the answer. To act as if this is not taking place, this is earth-shattering for the future of this nation. And so people don't want to have the conversation because it bothers people who are on the other side of this and who have bought into this cultural war.
Well, I mean, the fact is,
I don't know if they, because maybe they didn't do it intentionally.
Yeah.
But they've been sucked into it.
Well, I think people, it's like a magnet, okay? There's a magnetic force that draws us in the direction of what our DNA inclines us towards. And our DNA inclines us towards being comfortable with people who are like us and uncomfortable with people who aren't like us. That's inherent, okay? And that's something that we've been overcoming in this country. And however, when we let loose of the control levers that work on societal acceptance, we end up with some very divisive things. You can, you know, people look at the Balkans and shake their head about the Bosnians and the Serbians and the Croatians, but, you know, we could turn into that.
844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You can join the conversation. Don't touch that dial. Aren't what they used to be. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I was letting my mind travel with Marvin Gaye and Mercy, Mercy Me. But anyways, Tuesday, that means Tuesdays, with my co-host Sandy Williams. And Sandy, we're talking about what you have pointed out. We're all asking, what is going on? What is happening? The nation, people are in some strange places following a guy, you know, who for all the world is unstable, you know, and has clearly stated that when I get reelected, I'm going to be a dictator. Like, here's a guy who says it out of his mouth. Only for one day, I'm going to be a dictator. And somehow that gets dismissed. Oh, well, he really didn't mean it. Sandy, he meant it. And I'm going to get the people who've given me hell retribution. He said these things, Sandy. How do people follow a person and say that, yeah, that's the guy who should be running the country?
Well, like I said before the break, I think the problem is that if you're worried about a cultural revolution and if you think the numbers are getting away from you in terms of the vote count that will side with you in how you view what American culture ought to be, then you need to find mechanisms that essentially circumvent the plural vote. And so a strongman president, I mean, that's sort of how you get there. People get frustrated with democracy for whatever their reasons, and they shift gears towards autocracy and strongmen. They try to find the strongman that is emblematic of what they think is important, and they'll install him. And the problem is that it almost never works in any country, because strongmen tend to do things all for their own interest, and they forget about who it is that installed them. Particularly, it's very common for strongmen over history to have been installed by through a populist movement. Populist meaning it's a people's movement, and populist movements are typically anti-government populist movements. The people are frustrated with their government and become populists, and commonly in history, populists have put their might behind an individual. And that individual is not particularly a democratic institution. And so then we have to ask ourselves, well, why is this happening in America? Why would people be pulling the plug on democracy per se and moving in the direction of strongman government? And I believe that it really does relate to this cultural upheaval. And there's a number of things that are emblematic of it, the woke issue, the DEI, so you can look at the issues that develop heat, okay?
The books in the library.
So the books in the library, the DEI, the woke aspects of things, these are all things that generate heat, but they're generating heat because they're emblematic of this cultural upheaval that is going on. And I believe, unfortunately, that it's returning us much more towards what our DNA drives us towards, which is tribalism. And I'm not vilifying the people who are doing this. This is a very common human response. It's the most common human response to fear.
And fear, yeah, right.
So if you're fearful, you retreat to the things that are comforting to you, and tribalism is very comforting. And so, you know, we just have to figure out a way to relieve fears. Because we have people who get much more strident about issues than the issue deserves. And that stridency isn't, in my book, I'm not a psychologist other than an amateur, but my belief is those people are getting strident, not because the issue is important, but it's because of the underlying cultural fears that they have. And the issue is simply the way that they can spar about what they're talking about. So people who want to get really upset about today's economy are obviously missing the boat, because the economy doesn't have serious weakness in it. It's doing very well by almost all every macro count. You can point at inflation as having been experienced. You can point at the fact that some things have gotten more expensive. Those people forget to point at the fact that salaries have also gone up, and that if you measure the economy and the experience of people in the economy, it's actually doing very well. And we didn't have a recession. But people will get very heated about it. People get very heated about Joe Biden's occupancy in the White House, and the fact that they'll do anything, they'll elect anybody to defeat Joe Biden. Well, we need to unbundle what it is that makes them feel so upset and angry about Joe Biden to figure that out, because there's not much that you could look at that's superficially based on empirical data that would drive you in the direction of being that emotive.
Let's do this. Let's go to the phone lines. And David from Mequon. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. So you brought up, there's things I agree with you, Sandy, in the cultural end of things. And I'll just point out, I did watch, you know, the presidents of Claudine Gay from your alma mater of Harvard, Liz McGill of the University of Pennsylvania, and Sally Kornbluth of MIT. And I was horrified when I saw what they were saying. And the only reason I Claudine
Gay... Well, what were
Gay,
they saying, David?
Well, I mean, Claudine Gay, I mean, I think he's talking about her testimony in Congress
about what took place in Gaza.
No. She was asked whether if students at Harvard called for the genocide of Jews, what would her reaction be? And her response, which was mysteriously vague, was it would depend on the situation. And I'm characterizing it because I'm saying right. That from memory. But you know, I think you're right that there are plenty of circumstances that give rise to this cultural reaction, because. And I said, you know, the wokeism and the is all a part of it.
But it depends on because
we've interrupted Dave.
Yeah. Well, okay. Go ahead, Dave.
I have some more info. I want to say a couple more things. One is, you know, if you remember when Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee asked the question to Ketanji Jackson, the U.S. Supreme Court, and they asked her the definition of a woman was, she said, "I'm not a biologist." She couldn't really answer what a woman stands for. That's pretty freaking scary.
Well, I, you know, let me just ask, because I think the word scary is the part of this that, see, it does, it's unsettling to people, and you use the word scary, but I mean, really, you know, it's because of the whole issue and that was described as woke that relates to sexuality and transsexualism, etc.
Yeah, but
and people and I don't quite understand why people find that scary. I find it mysterious.
But I have to say this, because that's to some people. Let's stop talking and acting like this is something that impacts and affects all Americans. These issues are issues to some Americans, not all.
Well, but this is my point, actually, that from a cultural standpoint, it's unsettling. Okay, and for those of
again,
us
again to some,
but for those who are of Americans who are uncomfortable in the current culture, and who find it upsetting, it's because of the differences from the norms that they are used to. Okay, so that if someone, you know, the whole, first of all, transsexualism is a very small number of people, but it's gotten a disproportionate amount of attention. And so there are people who are reactive to the attention that it's getting, and to the fact that for those who haven't experienced the issues associated with it, it is mysterious and different. And so my point is that I think, because we are all uncomfortable to some extent, or to the extent we get more uncomfortable in our current setting, we begin to retreat to the word that Dave used, which is fearful.
So let me ask you, Sandy, do we cater to, because again, that's at best 40%, maybe 50% of the population. There's another 50% of the population that doesn't agree with that. Do the other 50% of the population cater to what that 50% of the population believes?
Well, it's, but
is
it's
that what we're talking
it's
about?
It's being used as an exemplar. It's being used as an example that then can excite people, because it's obviously we're dealing with small numbers.
Right.
But the subject itself is inflammatory to some people because of the extent to which it is different from their norm. Right. And so that's what this whole cultural revolution is about, is exciting people into a point of feeling scared about things that are outside the norm that they are comfortable with. And we've got a large number of people who have been excited in that fashion. So that's why I started out this premise by saying I really think we're involved with a cultural kind of a revolution.
All right, Dave, go ahead.
There again, there's no question. Yes, it's not a matter of comfort. It's just a matter of, I guess, it is a completely different ideology than what we're used to. However, you know, I would think that we could all be on the same page when you're defining what a woman is. And saying that, you know, she's not a biologist. I mean,
Dave, wait. I mean, there are, you know, right now there are two sexes, a man and a woman. And I guess the way you define a woman is that she's not a man. And the way you define a man is that she's not a woman. And the way you define them, I suppose, has to do with their genitals. And so, I mean, but do you think all of that needed to be discussed? I mean, the question itself begs a kind of a goofy answer, doesn't it?
Well, again, I'm just looking at it from the basics of the fact that she's going to be making cases predicated on, you know, obviously genders and everything else in that nature. And we have that context. We've already had that with race in this country, is to, we, you know, obviously black people were not allowed to vote in the United States just because of the color of their skin. And what I'm saying to you is that this is a different situation, and where we're now having, and people are bothered by this, and I'm bothered by
well,
it.
Well okay, Dave, so- Dave, let me just ask a question. Let's just explore just for a second. Let's say that someone does have gender affirming surgery or gender changing surgery, okay, and it's because of reasons that are predicated on their particular issues and problems, and they do it with medical advice, and they are and they become from their standpoint a woman. Are they entitled to be a woman?
Yes.
Well, I'm just asking Dave because I think that's why this potential justice of the Supreme Court was careful in the answer, because she might have litigation before her in which somebody has had gender affirming surgery. And she is therefore in her mind claiming to be a woman. And the question is, that is, what is the legal context? What is the legal context?
Well, furthermore, it's not my business.
No, but I mean, I'm just trying to get down
I know where you're coming from.
But I mean, the fact that she was unable to answer the question the way it was does sound like a silly situation. And I can understand people pointing at it, but I do think she probably had a reason as a potential justice of the Supreme Court for answering it carefully.
Okay, so the phone lines are jammed. So thank you very much for the call, Dave. So listen, it's not my business. I think where we are in this country right now is, if someone wants to do those things, this is America. People are free to do things that under the Constitution that they have a right to do. And the fact that people are worried and it bothers them and it makes them feel, it doesn't matter. It's not up to you and me.
No, I agree, but if we're talking about a political movement, that is up to you and me. And the extent to which we are made uncomfortable by the circumstances of our culture are having an impact, and some of those circumstances are what we're talking about right now.
All right, you guys hang on the lines. We'll come right to you, I promise you. 844-967-2789 is the number.
Johnny Angel.
Johnny Angel.
Johnny Angel.
Back to the Earl Ingram Show. Johnny Angel, how I love you. You remember Johnny Angel, Sandy?
I do.
Welcome back.
I remember that song and Johnny Angel. I don't remember him. I don't remember him separate from
that. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. It means Tuesday. This is my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to Gene from LeClaire. Hey, good morning to you, Gene. You say what?
Hi, guys. You know, you're trying to figure this out today.
It's going to take more than one day to figure it out.
Definitely, because this has been going on for a long time. And I know this is a weird term, but my background's psych. And I couldn't figure out how Scott Walker got elected. So I started thinking, what are psychologists saying about what's going on here? Because that's when we had totally conservative radio. We also had religious radio. I was documenting when the churches were breaking apart in my area due to moral issues. And there was a Republican who was documenting where the churches were splitting because of, and they were proud of it, because of moral type things. I mean, you know, a lot of the churches went under because of this type of thing. And I thought, now what in the devil's going on here? And I talked to a friend, they go, oh, that happened in Minnesota a while ago. So then I started paying attention to the different places. I thought, now this is odd, you know what I mean, churches splitting, because they may have a woman minister, or because they may have a, they accept gays. It was just unbelievable to me because I thought, you know, what is going on with the thinking? Then I started to document the different messages and the framing that people were saying on right-wing radio. And it was amazing because it was the same line all the time. And I would speak with people and say, now, why do you think of this? They couldn't say, but they believed it with all their heart and their feeling. Now, they utilize the framing, and framing is thinking, and all thoughts physical. And they're like neural circuits in our brains, because there was a guy who had been trying to get people to pay attention that this was going on.
Excuse me a minute. What was the, you said that they were using the same rubric. What were the words? I mean, what was the message?
Okay, there's messages here. I wrote down the conservative framework. And what they were saying is that, you know, they hit for the emotions, because a lot of thinking is unconscious thought and responses to things that you feel. And a lot of them are a unified moral framing. And what happens once you start, you know, going to this moral, and this is really specific, and I just grabbed this morning. I wasn't prepared to call in on this, but we need to be alert to it. People need to look it up. They need to pay attention to this.
Because, Gene, I was going to say one thing that has come out most recently in Trump's speeches has been his notion that this next election is the last battle. It's the last battle for American culture. And that, to me, is the battle cry of the cultural war. And the last battle is, in many respects, sort of an apocalyptic cry. And so it, to me, what got me worried and thinking about this whole cultural battle was actually that language, the notion that Trump is using it in almost every stump speech he gives, that this is the last battle.
Hey, Gene, I wish I had more time. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to CJ. CJ, good morning.
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. I'd love to come in because I know I will be talked over or cut off. You know, we're living the culture war.
We're
seeing kids get kicked out of their school for illegal immigrants, and that's a fact.
So,
right,
CJ,
Sandy?
CJ, see, you ask why you get cut off and talked over. You know, you can't tell me one place where students are being kicked out of their schools for illegal immigrants.
New York.
Sandy calls
Trump an influencer. Well, I call Biden a destroyer, because you can look at girls in sports. You want to ignore it. It's true that we are kicking kids out of school. The mere fact that we're watching the border, and this president says the border is under control. Sandy knows.
What does that have to do with the conversation that we're having?
Well, no. I think CJ, it's one of the reasons I think, CJ, you get so up about all this is the fact that you feel emotional about it. And I don't know the facts of the border exactly. I do know that there have been more people arrested at the border under the Biden administration than under the Trump administration. I don't know when recently Biden has said that the border was under control, or because I think there's a general agreement, even by him, that the border is a problem and needs to be addressed. The question is, how is it addressed? I think what you're reciting is exactly what I'm talking about. People are focusing their eyes on the things that they find upsetting and different. And, I don't know anything about whether children are being kicked out of school in New York for truants. I mean,
immigrants are taking their spots.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, go ahead quickly.
Are you aware that illegals are allowed to vote in some communities?
I would.
Okay. Well, you guys need to do a little.
Well, wait a minute. Wait, just a minute. CJ, we can't talk much longer, only because of the stack of calls that are coming in. If an illegal voted in the last election in one of the 65 jurisdictions in which there was a lawsuit to determine whether there was fraudulent voting, it would have been revealed that they were fraudulent votes, because illegals can't vote except fraudulently. All right. So that's an assertion that I don't think can be factually borne out at this point. You know, it might be a belief people have, but I don't think there's been any proof that there's been any wholesale voting like that, because all of the lawsuits reveal no kind of systemic fraud in any place in the election.
All right, guys, hang on the lines. 844, we'll come directly to you, I promise you. 844-967-2789. You can join the conversation. No. Don't touch that dial. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.